Hello and welcome to Unlicensed Therapy, the variety comedy show podcast. My name is Peter.
And I'm Andreas.
And we are your two sagacious and slapstick hosts of Unlicensed Therapy, the show where we have no reason to be giving anyone advice, telling stories that yield any kind of moral, ethical value, or any such thing that might lead to advice or answering questions. But you're listening to us do that anyway, for both each other and our lovely, lovely listeners. Andreas, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Peter?
I'm good. I'm tired. I stayed up way later than I had initially planned on last night because I got wrapped up in a D&D game, and we did a lot of combat, and combat ran a little bit longer.
And yeah, okay, okay.
And it was really sick. But I went to bed at like 1:30 in the morning, and I paid for that today.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
You know what? It's okay. I forgive you. So, Andreas, I don't really have a story of. Well, I have it's a baby story, but more of a question.
This sounds like it's going to turn into a rant.
It's a little bit of a rant.
If I know anything about you.
Yeah. So I was Snapchatting the other day, and I went to. I have this like really nasty habit of like checking and keeping up on everybody's Snap stories, because knowing that they exist without having been watched bothers me. I do the same for emails. Like, if I see that it's unread, even if I don't read it, I have to mark it as read so I don't get a notification. So every time I, like, right before I close Snapchat, I try to watch everybody's stories, even if I do not give a flying shit what they're about, just because it'll bother me. But I accidentally clicked on one of the Snapchat Discover section stories.
Okay.
You know, where they'll like celebrity stories will be, or like really garbage tier news stories are.
Right. Okay.
So like, or like ads or that kind of stuff. So like, for example, the three top stories that I have on my phone right now are from Transform 3D, which is, I'm 95% inked, so will I hate my tattoo cover up? Garbage clickbait. Next is from Wired. The title, the headline is Lil Huddy rich now? Like, first of all, who is Lil Huddy? And why do I care if he's rich? If he is making music, probably. Like, duh. And finally, from Hooked on the Look, headline, I'm making my waist smaller, and you won't believe how. Like, I don't care. Why? Why?
This is like the our generation equivalent of the shitty magazines in the grocery line.
Yeah, but it's just like, I don't know a single person that actually clicks on those, because they're like mind-numbing garbage.
I always feel like when you go to like a news website, or you click on an article from Reddit or some other site, and it takes you to this awful website where first you're assaulted by splash ads. Mm-hmm. And then you start trying to scroll on the article, but like more ads start popping up in the header, so you can't scroll, and it's like glitching out.
Yeah, and then like a third of the way through the article, it's like, you need to pay $5 a month to read the rest of this article that you'll only ever see once. And it's like, no, no.
So, and then at the bottom of those articles are the headlines from the Snapchat, from the Snapchat Discover. That must be how they find them.
It's just like, God, who, like, this is an open letter to anybody that writes terrible articles like that. Are you proud of what you write? Are you happy with what you write? Because it's absolute, I don't even have words to describe it. Like, I'm struggling to find words that explain my disgust and hatred for, like, this terrible tabloidy, clickbaity poop that is constantly being put out on the internet. Like, whoever writes those, I hope it's a side gig and not your true calling, because good Lord.
I'm guessing, too, whoever's articles are on the front of that Discover thing pay a lot of money for that, because I can get my own little echo chamber of news and information just by tailoring my Instagram feed or my Twitter feed to whatever I want it to be. Like, I'm not like, I wonder what's going on in the world right now. I go to Snapchat Discover. I'll just go on the thing that I already know works for the things I'm interested in.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Reddit and Twitter are my two sources of news.
Yeah, Reddit literally is the front page of the internet, right? That's their thing.
Like,
and you just set it to whatever subreddits you want to look at, and that's your thing.
Exactly. I don't need dumb shit populating my Snapchat story, because I'm never going to click on it, except by accident, and then I get angry about it and shout about it on the podcast. It's like, come on, man.
Snapchat's the black sheep of the social media situation.
Yeah.
In, like, it's always trying to introduce things that I don't feel like they really stick.
Right.
Like, you know how you can turn on your location on Snapchat, and I don't know, maybe that's just a veil for what they actually want, which is data collection. But
of course it is.
Who uses the location thing on Snapchat?
See, like, there are people that, like, have it on and I think don't care or don't know. But I don't think people actually use it. I mean, there's, like, the weird, like, if you're trying to stalk somebody, and you should stop if you are, kind of, like, way, if you could, you know, see, like, if you know that people are, like, having a party, mm-hmm. and you need to see where this party's at because you weren't invited, but you want to show up and wreak havoc anyway. I feel like that's a use, but, like, nobody actually uses it. But
I also don't want all of my somewhat acquaintances who I talk to on a regular basis. I talk to probably 4 people on my Snapchat friends list, mm-hmm. and everybody else doesn't need to know my location.
Yeah. My location is turned on for one person, and one person only. And that's my fiance.
And it's me. Oh, okay. It's not me. No. Yeah, I don't know. I feel weird about it. It's funny because I feel like even, I don't know, 12 to 15 years ago, it was a thing of don't post anything about yourself online. Don't even post pictures of yourself online unless it's to close circles of friends. And now you've just got millennials and Gen Z, like, I don't know, posting pictures of their buttholes online or whatever.
Hell yeah, dude.
Anyway, but I feel like this conversation in 5 to 10 years is going to make us sound real old.
Oh, I know. That's what I'm worried about.
I don't want to become, like, blind to the new technology, right? Like, I don't want to age out of it with it.
I don't want to become that, like, technologically illiterate, like, middle-aged man that most of our parents are, you know. I want to try my hardest to stay at least maybe not, I don't want to keep up with, I know I can't, but at least, you know, be a step or two behind, but still understand everything.
Yeah,
you know?
I already feel like I'm like it a little bit. I'm like, oh, I don't understand Fortnite. Oh, what's TikTok?
See, that's the thing, right? That's where I knew that I have ascended to a different level of maturity, is that I do not understand TikTok for a damn.
And
here's the thing. I also have zero interest to get into it. That's how
that's the problem, though. You're going to fall behind.
I know. It's the problem, but also, like, how I know that there's a new generation among us that we will not truly understand ever. Because TikTok is enabling this younger generation to use new lingo just totally change the English language right before our very eyes.
Right.
And different, like, you know, there's so much tied into this because it travels so quickly. Like, I had to ask Maddie the other day what the hell it means when kids, like, stick out their arm. I'll show you, Andreas, where they stick out their arm and they point at, like, the middle of their elbow. Because I was like, okay, I've seen this on Twitter because I get a handful of, like, silly, like, the good TikToks on my Twitter feed.
Uh-huh.
But I had to ask because I was like, what does that mean?
What does it mean?
It means ice in the veins, which translates to you don't crack under pressure. Like, you're calm.
Okay.
Like, you got it. You have your head on straight. You're not going to, like, get stressed out. Like, you're a cool dude.
Very cool.
I don't get it. Where, like,
I feel like we need to have a 12-year-old come on the show and explain this to us.
Yeah, we need somebody to help translate some of this new stuff.
Oh, I don't understand the woke kids these days.
Yes, woke. Back in my day, it was beast and boss. Remember when that was a thing?
Yeah.
Like, so beast, dude. You're such a beast, bro. Like, oh, that's so boss. Yeah.
I'm cringing.
I know, but I know we said it, which is the worst thing, is coming to the realization that we were those people at one point in our lives.
So going back to the social media thing, though, and the Snapchat thing with the mm-hmm. stories specifically, I feel like stories came out. I can't remember which platform did stories first. I think it was Instagram.
No, it was definitely Snapchat.
Okay. Yeah, I think you're right.
Snapchat first, Instagram second.
Snapchat, Instagram, and then everybody.
Then everyone else.
And on apps that make no sense for stories, you know? What?
Yeah, because LinkedIn even has stories now. Like, I don't... Who care? Who is using LinkedIn often enough to watch stories? Like, yeah. That seems like a massive waste of time and resources for LinkedIn.
I've never had an opportunity in my life to use LinkedIn effectively to the full power of its, like, the reason it was created.
Oh, networking, yeah.
And partially because I've pretty much just rolled right from one job to another. I haven't had to use LinkedIn for networking.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel like people are just hanging out on LinkedIn when they're happy with their careers.
Well, right. So, like, I don't get it, man. I just don't.
But, okay, so for example, with this story thing, I have an app which tells you guitar chords for songs.
Yeah, great.
And there's a story section of, like, people, like...
You've got to be kidding me, really?
Posting guitar covers and whatever.
What?
Yeah.
No.
There's stories on everything. I think Spotify has stories now or something similar.
No, they can't. No. Why?
This is out of control. Yeah.
Stop. Everybody that makes stories, cut it out. They are a waste of time. People will watch stories on Instagram and Snapchat. They were the first to do it. They will always be the ones that are the most effective. Yeah. But, like, god damn.
And I get it. I get Facebook and Twitter having it just because I understand that. Because
Facebook owns Instagram. It was bound to happen.
Yeah, I get it. And obviously Twitter, yeah, because obviously
Twitter.
Stop there.
Yeah. No, yeah. Just cut it. Yeah, YouTube has stories. Like, come on. Like,
yeah, YouTube has stories. Everybody has stories. Oh, so it reminds me too of the situation with all of the streaming services.
Yep.
You know, where Netflix hit huge success and Hulu hit huge success and then Amazon made their own thing. And now, for some reason, every studio, every producer ever has a streaming service. Like Peacock, NBC has a streaming service. Paramount is coming out with a streaming service.
Apple is hyping their streaming service up now.
Oh God, it's so annoying.
They're building
annoying.
A streaming service.
It's just cable all over again.
Of course
we already had this.
And because it's cable all over again, they're going to start buying each other out. You're going to get these cool packages. For example, you can get ESPN Plus, Spotify, and Disney Plus, and Hulu all in one bundle for $19 a month. It's like, okay.
That already sort of exists, I think.
No, it's, yeah, I know, because I own it.
So,
but like,
you would think that, okay, so for stories, right, you would think that would be intellectual property somehow. I remember very early on when Instagram was like, hey, by the way, we have stories too. I was kind of, I don't know, surprised, because you would think that Snapchat would have the IP for that. But now everybody does it. So is there no protection against that?
You would think, but I think it's because Snapchat didn't trademark the word story.
Right.
Because I think that would be a very long and difficult court case.
Oh, yeah. Do you remember when Candy Crush tried to, or when King tried to trademark candy?
I do. Yeah, that is a nightmare. Like,
but I don't know. You'd think they'd have some sort of legal protection to say, we came up with this. Everybody obviously has a copy of it now. Cease and desist.
Yeah. I mean, maybe originally, but yeah, I don't know. They all have great lawyers. Yeah, what's next? Discord stories?
I'm waiting for stupid stuff, like you go on allrecipes.com and there's,
oh my,
like,
god, yeah,
cooking story.
Amazon. Well, where's my Amazon story?
Yeah. I go on O'Reilly Auto Parts to buy a new car battery and there's the O'Reilly stories page. Yeah. It's like,
god, yeah. Where's my Google Docs story, please?
I log into the county's website to sign up for jury duty, and there's jury stories.
Oh my god! That
you know,
be,
how
that
far does it go?
Good.
How far does it go?
Until it becomes uncool, it's gonna die with our generation, right?
I want to know what the next thing is. I always used to say, I want to have a job that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah, I think that'd be sick.
When I was younger, people were like, "What do you want to do when you grow up?" I'm like, "I want to have a job that doesn't exist today." Yeah. I just want to know what that is. Just want to know what that next thing is, and you hit it early.
I mean, yeah, I think it'd be cool, like, you know, when people were asking us that 15 years ago, and, you know, maybe it kind of existed. Like, if professional drone pilot, if you told somebody that 15 years ago, they'd be like, oh, he's going into the military. Right. That's cute. But these days, you could work in cinema, real estate, general photography, mapping, like geologic mapping,
sporting events,
or
F1.
Sorry, geographic mapping.
Yeah,
like being a drone pilot is so different, and it's evolved so weirdly compared to, you know, a drone used to be just an unmanned aircraft that would drop bombs. Or survey, I guess. But, you know, typically you only hear about the drones that drop bombs.
Yeah. No, for sure. In 2008, when you talked about a drone, it was flying around the Middle East in a war zone.
Yeah, but now when you hear drone, you're like, oh, he's got one of those really cool 4K camera drones that's right. You know, illegal to fly within 5 miles of an airport. But
they're trying to make them illegal in cities and stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
Regulate, I suppose.
Yeah, because they break or skid by a lot of the FAA stuff. I don't know a whole lot, but I know they are a little weird. But I look forward to posting on my drone story later this evening. So, Andreas, I know that you love to keep up with pop culture and media. So, did you watch and love the Oscars?
I certainly did not even remember that the Oscars were on.
Me too. I found out today that they happened last weekend.
Okay. I was like peripherally aware of them.
Yeah. I no idea that they were happening. The only thing I've seen is that people are kind of pissed that Chadwick Boseman did not earn a posthumous Oscar for whatever.
Okay.
I don't know why or for what movie or who beat him out, but people are upset about it or something. I don't know. But this kind of ties into my next question is like, who does anybody really watch and care about the Oscars anymore? Because like I feel like I've read numerous headlines and articles saying that, oh, the Oscars or any award show, like their ratings are dropping consistently year after year. So like, are we finally at the point where they give up? Because like 20 people watch them and actually care?
And this goes back to the fact, well, first of all, I don't have cable, right? And I assume you don't, and I assume most of the people our age don't. I wouldn't even know where to start looking for how to watch the Oscars.
Well,
you know, because award shows were like a late night TV show thing.
Right.
And that's the thing. Like late night show, late night hosts would host these things and you'd get whoever from late night television to host these award shows. I'm pretty sure Jimmy Kimmel's done it like 87 times because he's the only one that'll keep saying yes. And now that there's not cable, now that cable's not a common thing in households, I would say I think now, at least in metropolitan areas, we're below the 50% mark for households with cable, I would think. Mm-hmm. Or I guess I would say households that primarily watch cable. I feel like everybody has Netflix and Hulu and whatever. It's just not available. That's got to be part of the rating issue.
Yeah, and I think it was a tweet from Eddie Burback, if you follow him, that he said that why the hell were the Oscars not streamed? Because Disney owns ABC. Right. Why wasn't it on Disney Plus?
I do know that they were streamed,
but
on Hulu.
Oh, on Hulu? Well, I mean, yeah, okay. So, like, why only one of the two streaming services that they own?
I don't know. It has something to do with contracts, I assume.
I guess. Well, yeah, I guess the ABC part of Disney is Hulu.
Right.
But you would think that they would try to make it as widely available as possible.
Well, see, in my opinion, I don't think Disney cares all that much about the ratings of the Academy Awards.
Of course not. As long as they keep shoving Star Wars down our throats, everybody will be happy. Like,
I mean, that's not their selling point. The Academy Awards happen once a year.
Mm-hmm. You get a Star Wars movie every Christmas, and you get a shitty musical every, like, May. I don't know. Disney has enough money that they'll never go out of business, and, you know, people will keep consuming their product.
I think, too, with the rise of the internet, the sort of intrigue and, I don't know, competitiveness of award shows has really worn off. And you can really see behind the scenes now how it's not rigged. Well, maybe that's a good word for it, but it's definitely not rigged.
I see what you're saying. It's really, I don't think it's as like celebratory. It's not like as dignified as it used to be. Like before it was like, oh, that won 3 Oscars. That's got to be a really good movie. But nowadays you're like, oh, it won 1 Oscar, but it also won 6 Golden Globes and it was nominated for 3 Emmys and it has a Tony Award, but it's, you know, a poem. You know, like they're just these labels to try and sell the movie, the TV show, the whatever better. They don't have as much pull or meaning anymore.
I agree. And there's also definitely a narrative from whoever's pushing these award shows based on the types of movies and the types of criteria. I don't know. It seems manufactured.
It is. And I think along, you know, with cable TV, it's a dying phenomenon that I think we'll, in our lifetimes, we'll probably see the end of big award shows, or at least some of them. You know, they might try to adapt, but I don't foresee mm-hmm. them lasting another 100 years.
One thing that I was vaguely aware of with the Oscars, I think there's a big push to get stunt performers in movies in Oscar category. And
they don't?
No. Not as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, I mean, that feels really like they do a lot, man. They do a lot of hard work. And they get beat up, man. Like, that's their job, is to get slapped around. And, like, if they make it good, and, like, they have a category for best editing, right? I mean...
Uh-huh. I think a lot of those sort of behind-the-scenes categories, they don't even show at the award shows,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, but they do, like, best costumes and hair and makeup and stuff.
Yeah, that's in the picture, though.
I know.
Like, no, I feel like the general public, the people that watch the Academy Awards, don't care about best lighting design.
That's true. Even
or best stunt performance or best sound editing.
Right. Yeah. You don't get an Oscar for best Foley artist,
right?
Which would be sick, but yeah. I think they need to restructure award shows in order to stay relevant, because otherwise people will just go to YouTube to see, you know, why a movie is good. They won't rely on...
Do they need to, though?
They don't need to. You know, you can just watch the movie for yourself and make an assessment.
I feel like there's a lot of this whole... This is me sounding... I don't know. This would be sounding ranty, probably.
Go for it.
I feel like there are a lot of things that people always talk about. Oh, they need to restructure this if it's going to survive. Oh, they need to restructure that if they want to survive. Oh, malls, they need to figure out how to restructure malls so that they can make it in this world. And it's like, do they? Do we need them?
No. Is this sweet?
Do we
and
need
simple.
Award shows?
We don't need them. Right. They already exist in so many other more modern forms. But we want to stick to some level of tradition to grasp that, like, remaining bit of culture we have left in, like, you know, analog media, if you will.
Yeah, I suppose so.
So, like, until the Oscars has a really bumpin' YouTube channel... Like, they're still gonna be like, I don't know. It's such a weird kind of like enigma of popular media, I guess. I don't know.
In my mind, the way to keep Hollywood relevant, Hollywood in quotes, the movie industry relevant, and film and a lot of media, is not to restructure the way we do things for tradition's sake, but to go back to really celebrating independent filmmakers and independent artists and small studios, and move away from a really big corporate push just to pump out super good movies all the time that have huge numbers in the box office. I feel like that would be the way to celebrate the culture and tradition of the film industry.
Right. Well, I think there's definitely a push for that because... You know, each streaming service now has a dedicated studio. Amazon has one. Hulu has one. Netflix has one. Obviously, Disney has one. Like, I feel like a lot of those smaller studios that can't get in with the big, you know, they can't get in with Paramount. They can't get in with Fox. You know, Netflix might pick it up. Hulu might pick it up. For, like, a really good one that comes to the top of my head is, like, did you watch Queen's Gambit?
I haven't yet. I've really been meaning to.
Oh my God. You know, it's a, I don't know what you would call it, a mini series. It's like 9 episodes. And you can't make that into traditional TV.
Uh-huh.
Because it's too short. But you can't necessarily make it into a movie because it's too long. So I think the super digestible 9 hour long, or maybe an hour and a half long. No, I think they're an hour long. Hour long episodes, it's just, it feels so much more accessible. And I think like a lot of the filmmaking industry is moving towards this more digestible content, these miniseries, because I think worldwide humans' attention span for entertainment is growing shorter. So because people don't want to sit down and watch. Well, even look at it like from this perspective is like, if you watch a movie from, I don't know, 1980 or before, they're long. They're at least 2 hours or more.
Right.
But nowadays, you would be caught dead if you released a 2 hour movie, unless it's like, unless you are have an enormous name. Like most movies nowadays are an hour and a half, hour and 45. Like give or take. And I think it's just getting shorter and shorter and shorter. And I blame TikTok and Vine and YouTube.
I think that miniseries format really works out in that way, though.
Oh, I think it's awesome. Don't get me wrong.
You have the option to watch one and spend the hour, and you say, well, this is our thing every night. We're going to watch one episode of this.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can binge it and watch a bunch in a row. And it, you don't have to commit to the two-hour-long movie situation, but you also get a sort of long-form version of this content that allows you to, like, go deeper into these characters and deeper into the story without having it be sort of, I don't know,
dumped on you all at once. Well, feel like it also gives you more time to process.
Yeah, that's true. But the point I was trying to get to is you don't get Avengers 1, $1 trillion in the box office, however much money it made in the box office. Avengers 2, a bundle of money in the box office. Avengers 3, a bundle of money in the box office. You know, that to me feels more like they're trying to sell the movie than they are trying to invest you in the story. Whereas these miniseries things on Netflix, you have Netflix anyway. They're not going to make a bunch of money from you going to see every single episode every single time.
Yeah, they're just banking on the fact that you'll continue your subscription because they'll keep releasing other awesome miniseries.
Exactly.
Another really good one. Have you seen End of the Fucking World?
No, I've seen the trailer for End of the Fucking
World. Oh my God, that's another great miniseries. And it's like, I probably watched it all in the span of like 5 days. Like I watched the first episode, I was hooked. And it's like, I love these things, not only because I have a terrible attention span, but also it's because if I need to take a break, I can. You know, I can watch an episode and I don't have to watch it for a week, 2 weeks. Who cares? But I never lose track of the story overall.
Right.
And I feel like that's really easily done in more traditional TV shows, or like if you start a movie. Like a lot of people start movies and never stop, or like never finish them. Like they watch a movie or they fall asleep halfway through, or they're like, okay, that's enough.
Or if you're Roy Boy, you turn it off right before the last scene.
Yeah, you turn it off 10 minutes before credits roll and you're like, huh, wonder how it ended. I guess I'll never know. Whatever. I feel like I really like miniseries is, I guess, the...
I think you have to have the responsibility as a director, though, to end it when it's over.
Yes. Do not milk a dry cow. That is some golden advice from me.
If it does really well and you finished the arc of the story and it's really solid and good, don't force yourself to continue it just because it did well.
Yeah.
You know,
I feel like there are a lot of directors out there that don't know how to end things well, and they need to read more turn of the century novels. in my opinion, because I really fight a lot of people on this, but for example, La La Land.
Okay.
I think that movie has one of the best endings
ever. So good. I love that movie.
Because it is so unsatisfying to most people.
And
they don't fall in love. They don't stay together, right? That's so good. But so many people want it to happen. I don't know. I really, there's something about it that's like, that is such a great ending because it leaves you wanting more, but you'll never get it.
Yeah, and they obviously they didn't make a sequel, and I think that's for the better. I don't think they could have made a better sequel than the movie.
No, and if they tried, it would have flopped. I don't think it would have been nearly as good. People would not have liked the music as much. And like, what do you tell? Like, the story is told. Like, you can't, like, if you piggyback off of what's already there, you're gonna ruin the first one. Like, it's such a, sequels are such a, like, treacherous road, I think.
I think that's an issue with a lot of modern media, books, movies, TV shows, you know, video games.
Yeah.
I think there is this huge push when you have success to just keep making it over and over
to
and
do
over
it again.
And over
yeah.
and over and over and like Assassin's Creed, for example. Assassin's Creed had a really good trilogy. Oh,
yeah, it did.
And now they're just stuck in this loop where they make it over and over and over and over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, it's so disappointing because it's like you've played
Star
it all.
Star Wars 2 has the same thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I feel like, you know, even like I haven't seen any of the new Marvel movies because I stopped giving a shit. I don't even know their names anymore. What's the second Avengers?
Age of Ultron?
Sure. that shows you how much. I watched it. I couldn't really recall any information about it. And when they released Infinity War, I had no desire to watch it.
It's a huge commitment to really be like into the story that they created.
Yeah,
it's a huge commitment.
And it's like, this is how I feel. And Marvel does this a lot. Unfortunately, it's like I loved Guardians of the Galaxy. I thought that was such a good movie, but the second one blows.
Okay.
I really don't like it.
Isn't there some drama with that? Wasn't it not the same director or something?
It might have been, but in my opinion, they shouldn't have made it. Obviously, you know,
they're thinking about Thor actually.
Okay. I have some story. See, the Thor sequel is so much better than the first one.
Okay.
It is so much better because in the first one, they try to make it this super serious, like, oh, he's Thor. He's a Norse god. He can kill things. He has lightning. But then whatever happened to that director wasn't there for the sequel. And whoever directed the second movie had the right idea because they made it so campy and it was so much more entertaining.
Do you know who the director is for Thor 1? I actually know this.
No.
Kenneth Branagh.
What?
Yeah, directed Thor 1.
Okay, and who did... It's the South African guy that directed the second one, right?
Taika did 3 and 4 for sure.
What's the second
one? Is that who you're thinking
of? Yeah.
No, sorry. Taika's... So Taika Waititi?
Yeah,
is that how
Taika
you say
Waititi.
It? Waititi? Who's from New Zealand, by the way.
Oh, New Zealand. I thought he was... Whatever.
Yeah, you know. Did Thor Ragnarok and is doing Thor Love and Thunder.
Yeah.
So not the second one.
What was the second one? Dark World?
Dark World, yeah.
Okay, so then it's the third. Ragnarok is a fucking phenomenal movie.
Yeah.
I don't think I even watched the second Thor. I don't know.
I don't think I did either.
Right. I don't know why. I watched the first one and I was like, okay, it's pretty good. Never saw the second one, but for whatever reason, I felt compelled to watch the third one, and I loved it.
It's easy to look at Marvel today and say, oh, yeah, they're so good, you know, because they're fun to watch, and they're good, high production value movies.
Right.
And it's easy to look at them and say, wow, Marvel's so good, it does so good. There was a time early in the Marvel situation where they were not hitting their stride the way that they have now.
Mm-hmm. Look at any of the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies.
No, but I'm talking about like into the Infinity arc.
Oh, okay.
You know, Thor 2, Iron Man 2 and 3. You know, even Age of Ultron, the second Avengers movie, wasn't like all that good.
Right.
And then they started getting more into the fun, campy, jokey version of Marvel that it is today. And it really did well.
Yeah, and I think that ties really well into my kind of armchair experts topic this week, which is what makes a good movie? And I feel like I should start this because I know I'm probably going to get a lot of heat for saying a lot of things in this
section. Peter. We've already explained that you haven't watched any of the Avengers movies. Star Wars sucks, blah, blah, blah.
Right. I've already committed cinema suicide. Band name called it. But I think that a good movie and an entertaining movie are completely different. I think you can have a wildly entertaining movie, but it can be so bad. My perfect example for a great entertaining movie, but cinematically horrific, is Pacific Rim.
Yeah. But you don't watch it for the production value.
That movie sucks. Exactly. That's the thing. That movie sucks if you care about anything other than giant robots fighting giant monsters. But, ooh, voice crack. But from every other standpoint, that movie is so freaking good. The soundtrack is so awesome, and you get to see giant robots fight giant monsters. I have no other expectations for that movie, right? And it was perfect.
So, honestly, you can say that good movies can fall into different categories for a good movie.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, and this is where I get snobby, where a film is not a movie, you know, that kind of, those people. Like, but like a good movie, I would say, is like La La Land. You know, I think the story is really good. It leaves a lot of, like, it makes you think a lot. You know, there's a lot of, like, unresolved conflict that you still feel like is okay at the end of the movie. You're like, all right, that wasn't...
Yeah.
How I wanted it, but I get it.
For sure. I want to turn this into like a movie reviewing podcast. In fact, actually, most of my friends know, I'm sure you know, I'm the worst movie critic on the face of the planet because I'm the type of person who can sit down in front of pretty much any movie and be interested and I'll watch it. And I'll get to the end of the movie and people are like, what did you think of that movie? I'm like, yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
Like, well, what did you think about this and that and the acting and the story and the right? I'm like, yeah, I don't know. It was good. I watched it.
See, I'm similar, except I have I can turn on and off that brain, that part of the brain. You know, if I go into a movie having the expectation that this is a film, not a movie, I can turn that on and I can be like, okay, this was good. This was bad, blah, blah, blah. If I go into that movie with the expectation of, it's giant robots fighting giant monsters, or it's a giant gorilla fighting a giant radioactive lizard, or it's a Mortal Kombat movie. Like, I know to turn off that like hyper analytical brain for movie stuff and just enjoy the shit out of it. Because here's a great example. Another awful movie that I loved to death was the new Sonic movie.
Okay.
I was so genuinely caught off guard by how good it was, like how much I enjoyed it, because I went in with the lowest possible expectations. Yeah. But all things considered, it wasn't bad. Like, it has some awful cringe stuff because I think they're trying to keep Sonic alive, especially in a new generation where he's bound to just suffer. Because there's no nostalgia left anymore. I really enjoyed it. But it was a bad movie.
Yeah. So I guess to answer your question, what makes a good movie? That, first of all, different for everybody. I don't think there's an objective way to answer that question.
It's
exactly.
A subjective thing. Absolutely not.
The last movie that I went and saw before COVID hit was 1917. Is that what it's called? Yeah, 1917, I think is what it's called. It shows what I know. Let me talk about this movie that I think is really awesome. I don't even know what the title is. No, but that movie to me was not, didn't have romance, right? It didn't have like really intricate storylines and plot lines. But it looked so good. The concept was amazing. The way they shot it was amazing, where it all looks like one continuous shot. And the storyline for these basically two characters throughout the whole movie was so good. It's one of the best movies that I've seen recently, yeah. Quotes on recently.
Yeah.
But then you can look at a movie like, I don't know, one of the critically acclaimed movies, like take Inception, for example. Okay. When Inception came out, that movie was pretty revolutionary for what it was. And that movie is the complete opposite. It's twisting timelines and intricate storylines and lots and lots and lots of acting and interacting and dialogue and heavy concepts, but also great CG and great editing and all that stuff. Those movies are two completely different movies. War drama, mm-hmm. period piece, and sort of a sci-fi action intrigue movie. And I would consider both of those to be really good movies.
Right, I would too. I think it's because they hit their marks so consistently. You know. And
I think you nailed it right there. I think consistency is important.
Yeah, they follow a general kind of theme or they have like a very identifiable structure. 1917.
Yeah.
It's more or less a single shot film or made to look so.
Right.
That's kind of the thematic glue holding the whole movie together. And it's that consistency that makes it awesome. Whereas with Inception, it's like, okay, you're really invested in the characters because you don't understand what's going on and you have to rely on the characters to explain mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
So I think, consistency is a huge part. Because
and sticking to one thing, not trying to do too much.
Right. You don't want to. Yeah, they're not trying to get too complicated. Like, for example, take The Last Jedi. They did not need any romance in that movie. That movie would have been 10 times better if they cut any ounce of romance, period. They should have stuck. Like, yeah, okay, you could fight me on this, that the original Star Wars movies had romance. Yeah, they did. But they kind of played all the romance out already. And adding more for the sake of whatever reason, it felt so auxiliary. It felt so, like, unnecessary because at the point at which they added it, it felt like it had no time to develop.
Yeah.
And you were invested in the characters doing, hero shit and not, falling in love.
I think you're able to look at a good movie and you're able to say, clearly this person had a vision for this movie.
Yep.
And the person that wrote it and the person that directed it, clearly they weren't trying to hit a bunch of check boxes where it's like romance, check, drama, check, action, check.
Yep.
They had a vision for a movie and a story and some characters. And I think it's a really good movie when you can see how that played out in someone's vision without trying to be everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Anyway, Andreas, thanks for talking movies.
Yeah, that went on for way longer than I thought it was going to.
We're gonna top this fine episode off with our questions and advice section. Still in the TV movie kind of area of conversation. At Taming of Carcasso asks on Twitter, why did Hanna-Barbera make the Jetsons 100% worse than the Flintstones? You want to take a stab at this?
Yeah, sure. This is a question that's almost just a touch before my time.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a little bit of reading on Wikipedia. And before anybody trashes Wikipedia, because whatever, it's Wikipedia. Every other word is a link with a reference, okay? So chill out, people.
Stop living in the early 2000s. Wikipedia is a reliable source.
Everything is cited on Wikipedia, period. Anyway.
Yeah.
So Hanna-Barbera, I did not know this until recently, as in an hour ago, is a company founded by the two founding animators for Tom and Jerry. And it's a studio, or it was anyway, and it was owned by MGM, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then some of their more notable shows were like The Flintstones and Tom and Jerry, Yogi Bear, The Jetsons, Scooby-Doo, and The Smurfs. Remember The Smurfs, Peter?
Oh, of course. So basically anything you've seen on Boomerang.
Right. Which clearly when Warner Media created Boomerang, they just somehow bought the rights to all of these shows because
yeah.
Everything Hanna-Barbera made, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't watch a ton of the Jetsons, did you?
Yeah, I watched bits and I've watched a handful of episodes. I think, I mean, you know, once again, this is purely subjective, but I think the Jetsons was worse than the Flintstones because it was less imaginable, if that makes any sense. Like, people love to make, you know, Flintstones-esque, you know, prehistoric stories, you know, because it's kind of out there. It's kind of wild. It's that suspension of disbelief. You're like, oh, these people totally have cars that they don't operate, you know, with a motor, but instead their feet, or they have pet dinosaurs, whatever.
Right, right.
It's so far out there that people are like, yeah, this is a cute little show. I love it. The jokes are great. I think with the Jetsons, they tried to do that, except they tried to adhere to what already existed in the world of technology and just stretch it. So, like, you know, flying cars, it's like, okay, everybody's done that. Or like, you know, telecommunication, it's like, yeah, it already kind of exists. You just made it look more futuristic. Like, it was just kind of bland in its presentation.
Well,
of the
okay.
Future. It wasn't anything unexpected.
Let's be 100% fair. Be 100% fair to the Jetsons. So the Flintstones,
Unga Bunga,
prehistoric times, cavemen, whatever, you can always make that up.
Exactly.
Always, because it's in the past. The Jetsons was bound to fail. It was 100% bound to fail because no matter how hard you try to guess the future, and this was especially a problem with sci-fi in that mm-hmm. era, in the 60s, 70s, 80s sci-fi, because technology took such a huge jump in 40 years that you could have never, ever, ever guessed what it was going to be like in the future.
Yep.
And I just think it's so funny. Like, you're watching Star Trek, right? And he's got this big old giant honking thing on his arm. And he's like, look at this. It can communicate with people and tell you the time. Yeah. Ha ha, it's the future. And now I've got that and a camera and a calculator
yeah.
and the internet. And I'm talking to you through my phone. And it's a teeny tiny little box, you know?
Right.
The Jetsons was bound to fail because as technology progressed, the Jetsons just looked outdated. And that's all. You know, it's the atomic era future, which just didn't happen.
Yeah, well, yeah. So I just looked it up. It premiered in 1962. So you nailed it. It's atomic era future. But it was set in the year 2062.
Okay.
We are 41 years from seeing that. The Jetsons world. And I guarantee you, I guarantee you it is going to be nothing like they predicted. Because the Soviets lost. Anyway.
Yep.
That's how we're ending this episode of Unlicensed Therapy. I hope that answers your question, Damon. As always, everybody, you can ask fun questions like that if you tweet at us at Unlicensed Show on Twitter or comment on any of our posts on Instagram, which is at Unlicensed Therapy Show. It's been a pleasure talking movies and TV with you, Andreas. I feel like if we went on Jeopardy and that was the sole category, we would have a fighting chance.
I'm going to respectfully disagree with you. I know jack all about movies.
Well, that's okay because we're armchair experts.
Anyways.
Hashtag blessed. Anyway, thank you for listening to this fine episode. We're wrapping up April. So you won't see a podcast after this one until May 14th.
Yes.
So what you have to do is just re-listen to all the podcast up to this point to kind of fill that void.
Absolutely. You know, I've realized what we've now done to ourselves is we have to have a really stellar episode every time we take a break.
Yeah, because we'll have a lot more preparation done, allegedly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely what's going to happen.
Anyway.
Peter, thank you so much for potting with me. It is a pleasure, as always. Until next time.
Yeah, I'm gonna stuff a burger in my face, so.
Do it.
We'll see you guys next time.
Here's the Jetsons theme song. Da 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 da.
I don't know what it is.
Go with our theme song.
Woo! Wow. Thanks for listening to the whole episode right to the bitter end. I just wanted to personally thank you because I'm editing this episode and I can do whatever I want. So your reward for listening to every second of episode 6 of Unlicensed Therapy is the following outtake from somewhere in the middle of the episode when I had to get my DoorDash. So enjoy.
Peace out, bitch!